This is Write Your Own Story, Three Keys to Rise and Thrive in Life and Business. I'm your host, Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. Hi, I'm Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. I am the CEO of a company called WeThrive.live, my keynote speaker and an executive coach. And you are tuning in to our Future of Work series here on the podcast. I am passionate about the shift that we are in as a society. And I believe it's the greatest shift that we've been in since the shift from the agricultural age to the industrial age model of work, where the work construct has such a significant impact on society. And in 2020, we experienced a global shutdown, global trauma, which led us into years worth of reflection on what success really is and what we want our lives to be. And I believe that we're still in this bit of chaotic shift, trying to decide what the right answer is. And what I'm seeing is a much needed and necessary shift to where our sense of worth and our sense of value doesn't come from our achievements and our work title, but comes from us knowing us. And I believe that is the shift that we have needed for some time, because the way that we were working was leading us straight to an epidemic of burnout. And while this time of chaotic shift is full of uncertainty and many leaders trying to figure out what is the answer, I wholeheartedly believe that the future belongs to those leaders who are willing to be creatives, who are willing to create the future of work. And I want to be a part of that effort. And so this series is dedicated to interviewing people and asking them, what do you think the future of work could and should be? What problems should we solve? What ideas should we consider? And by doing this series, it will lead us into our own sense of reflection as leaders and as employees. And what do we want? How do we want work to feel? And as we make this shift, I believe as we change the work, we can change the world into a society that honors each of our uniqueness and honors the value that we bring into an organization. So if we can change the work, we can change the world. Because, you know, making money just ought to feel better. So I'm glad you're here. As we continue to talk about the future of work, there's a few things that have come up in the episodes prior. One is that the future of work is now. And the way that we are choosing to run our businesses and our lives is shifting and adapting. And there's this awakening of sorts that people are saying this can't be all there is just to go to work, be exhausted, and get up and do it again day after day after day, and violate so many of our human needs to be personal, emotional, social, and just honor our human spirit. And so I've asked a client of mine, we haven't worked together for a while, but she was a part of my Rise and Thrive experience in season 3, and we just wrapped up season 5. And we had a chance to catch up over coffee a few weeks ago, and I just was inspired by how she has continued to explore her story and how it has impacted the business that she started. And I wanted her to come and share the rest of the story since she was on stage with us from our Stand Tall event a couple of years ago. And so I'm anxious for you to hear from Ashley Butler about her personal journey and experience, but also about the business that she founded and how she is honoring her human needs, both in her personal life and her business. All right, here we go. Ashley Butler. Welcome to the show. Today we have Ashley Butler from Rise and Thrive season 3. Welcome back to the show, Ashley.
Thanks so much for having me back. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to share a couple of aspects of your story as it continues to unfold. And just to give a little context for somebody that may be joining us new, Rise and Thrive is an experience that I hold every year for 7 women to go through for 7 months. And at the end of the 7 months, you get on stage and you tell a TED-like talk about your life and your experience. And we just wrapped up season 5. They just got on stage for International Women's Day and shared their stories. And as you and I were talking and preparing for that event, I got a chance to really catch up with you. It had been a while since we chatted, and I'm excited to have you talk on the show today about a couple of things. One, our story continues to unpack chapter by chapter by chapter, and we never go through a class or an experience or anything and just kind of check the box. We just take more insight in, we learn more about ourselves. And so you've got some updates to share personally about how you're continuing to evolve since Rise and Thrive. You have a big story to share about the business that you founded and what's happening with that. So just to give our audience kind of where we're going today, and as the starting point of this conversation, I want to recap your story that you told on stage for Rise and Thrive Season 3. It was a story of darkness and hope and the impact that business has on our lives. We always talk around here about business as human, that our human lives are personal, emotional, and social, and our business needs to control, measure, and optimize. And you got into healthcare as an anesthesiologist to help people. Unfortunately, the industry and the business had a really negative impact on your human life. So I wanted to share that with the listeners to say, we're not talking just about better leadership or better communication skills. We're literally talking about our human stories. And so that was such a big moment for you. Can you just take us back to that feeling of standing on a stage and sharing such a vulnerable, real story about yourself?
Yeah. So I think being able to share any part of our story is always a little bit vulnerable, right? Because for most of us, I think that whatever story we've actually lived, we have a tendency to polish that up a little bit before we then share it with the world. And during that experience with Rise and Thrive and leading up to getting up on the stage to actually share not just what happened, but being in front of all of those people, it was such a raw, and I am not a particularly vulnerable. It's not a thing.
That's
that
a
I do
light
a whole
way
lot
to say what I know to be true, which is vulnerability has never been safe for you in your story. And so I don't say that with any amount of judgment. I giggle because of course you were never vulnerable. Like you never had a safe place to allow yourself to be. But I feel that shifting a bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think it really did start with that experience. I mean, being up on the stage and sharing with my journey, going from a childhood of struggle and strife and not knowing where I was going to sleep or what I might eat next. And ultimately, I lived the dream, right? The dream that we're sold, which is that you can rise up out of your situation and be different. You can change your life. And I did that. I went from poverty to a world in which I was given so much privilege, moving into a realm of a family who did not have anything but a high school education, if they were able to finish that, into becoming a physician and going into anesthesiology as a profession and doing that training and being there. I thought that I had reached the pinnacle. I thought I had done all of the things that I had been told I needed to do to feel safe and secure, which was all I really saw initially. And then I shared with your audience, the folks that were there, how that story that I had imagined was not the story that I was living. And I felt like I was a cog in a machine, that somehow I had gone into medicine to help heal. And that just wasn't the case.
Because your life wasn't
being lived in our words, personal, emotional, and social, you were in the world of control, measure, optimize. How many patients? How many? How many? How many?
And I was told not to question that, Rebecca. And I think that this is an important aspect, because I had coffee with a dear friend of mine who still was in that world. And this person had to take a step back for substance abuse. There were real mental health issues. Well, then when you start to talk about that with people, you hear that this is commonplace. It's common, particularly in healthcare, particularly among physicians who have high stress.
Highest degrees of burnout of any industry, highest degrees right. of, like you said, addiction.
Suicide, abuse.
Suicide, yep.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And when the humanness of me started to come out, right, and I started to get vulnerable with people initially, and I didn't tell them everything that was going on, but do you know, I was told, well, we don't ask questions, right? They call it golden handcuffs for a reason. This is what we trade for the lifestyle that we live. And there was something in my soul that just screamed at that.
Because we've been sold the lie that money is the key to security. Well, I'm a fan of making great money, but
Absolutely.
Money gives you more options. Money gives you access, but it doesn't fill the hole of personal, emotional, and social just because of the amount of your bank account.
That's right. And so there was a lot of that story, right? I come from a very scarcity minded story. There was a hopelessness because I thought I had done all the things. I had checked all the boxes. I had done everything that everyone told me to do. And it wasn't just safety and security I was looking for. I mean, I thought the thing I was looking to fill within myself would happen, whether it be happiness or joy or what have you, purpose. I thought that that would be found if I did all of the things, you know, and I felt trapped in a way, sort of caged. I didn't know where to go or what to do. And so I became a danger to myself. And I knew that something inside of me sparked. It's difficult to explain, almost this resolve and sort of this acceptance of just what would be, and almost a peace. I didn't realize how far I had fallen. Like, I didn't know how bad I was. And I think that that's the insidious nature of depression. I was high functioning. No one knew what was going on. And I think that that is something that business leaders in particular need to understand, that your high functioning, high achievers are potentially struggling in real ways and no one's giving it voice. And so I ended up running into somebody on my way down to the call room. She was like, "Hey, you don't look great." And I was like, "I'm not." I said, "Can we talk?" And that's sort of where it just all came out. And I told her, I mean, I had the meds in my pocket. And I just said, "I'm not okay." And I broke down. I mean, we went to a conference room and I just shared what was happening. And I said, "I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know what's wrong with me." And this is where the collision, there was clearly compassion and empathy, right? I mean, just care and love by this person that I went to. And yet, the ingrained nature of the business, right? How it kind of sinks its claws, that system sinks its claws. This was on a Friday. And she said, "Well, you go home, take a couple of days, come back on Monday. We'll cover your call today and you can make it up next week." I was talking about ending my life. The whole time I was heading down the stairs to head out to the parking garage, I kept thinking, "Who's going to cover my call? I can't believe I'm doing this to my team. Who's going to cover my call?" And I think that that is a demonstration, if nothing else, of how sick our healthcare system is. So I got home and I reached out to a friend who actually did her doctorate work in physician burnout and suicide. So it was that day that she shared that I had no business making any decisions for myself for at least the next 30 days. And she said, "You're absolutely not going back to work on Monday." And that's where I relinquished control. And you know that that's a huge part of my story too. But I realized at least that I was not healthy enough. I was not well enough to try to still maintain control.
And I believe that because she had that background and experience and credibility in that space allowed you to relinquish that control. I don't think you would have been able to do that if I would have said to you, hey, Ashley, right. I think you need to take 30 days. You'd be like, what do you know? Because mm-hmm. you do have a high regard for people's titles and authority and credibility and research mm-hmm. and data. Like yep. that's part of being medical, thank God. Yep. And this person had the credibility and the background and the experience to say, no. And I think yep. that allowed you to say, okay. But you know, Ashley, I have seen so much in the last years since 2020, especially, that people coming to this realization that this can't be all there is. And so yes, in healthcare is the pinnacle of burnout and suicide rates, addiction and all these things. But in work and corporate America, I'm seeing things that scare the daylights out of me. And when I think about it through the lens of the nervous system, we become a product of our environment very quickly. We assimilate to the patterns, and those patterns become our identity, and those patterns become who we are. And if we're not aware of that and be able to be discerning to some patterns that are not good for us, you do become the person like that, the one that you talked to first that said, just come back on Monday, it'll be okay. Company culture, I'm even not liking the term anymore, because to me, what I know and I see is company culture means get in here and become one of us and lose a bit of yourself in the process. And I'm yes. not okay with that anymore.
Yep. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had coffee with this friend, and it's almost like there's an awakening. Everything that we knew just sort of got turned upside down during the pandemic. And I think it was sort of the beginning of this awakening of, this is not okay. Why do I not feel okay? Because as I'm sharing my story with people, then they feel more comfortable sharing their experience and their story. And it's not just in healthcare.
The one thing I believe is because we were collectively in this traumatic experience of shutdown, you don't feel like, is it just me? Because we were all in it together. Yeah. And that's powerful. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, I don't do anything without thinking that it's, you know, a spiritual awakening as well. But I do appreciate that it's given people the permission to have conversations about, is this can't be all there is, because everybody went through it at the same time. And so they're like, well, how do you feel since that happened? Well, how do you feel since that happened? And that's powerful.
Right. I think I'll say something out loud. Hopefully this is helpful to at least one listener, which is, when I stepped away from medicine and I did not go back, I had lunch with a friend and she said, you're kind of young for your midlife crisis. And I said, I think a midlife crisis is a very negative connotation associated with our soul not being in alignment with the work that we are doing. And it is us fighting back against it. I said, I think it's unfair to call it that. I said, I didn't go buy a Ferrari. I walked out of a hospital and I didn't go back because I knew in my heart of hearts, I was not going to survive it.
I got nothing but emotions about that, because the language and the way we talk about things matters. And so I'm so glad that you pushed back on that, because that wasn't a crisis. That was an awakening mm-hmm. of your soul yep. screaming at you and saying, Ashley, there's more to this than this. And so you've continued to explore that part of yourself even after Rise and Thrive, and doing things that have taken you deeper into that awareness about yourself. And that's the point. That's why I created this experience and why I knew it needed to be at least 7 months. I can't help anybody go into that place of discovering themselves in a 2-day workshop or a 1-hour keynote. And even yeah. in 7 months, it's just opening the door to say, what do you want? And you've continued to explore that. I just love that for you.
It's a journey, right? And I also think it's an unfair assessment. And I hope that for anyone who is listening,
a journey of 1,000 miles is not going to be walked straight. It's not going to be walked without falling, tripping, stumbling, having to stand back up, pick yourself up again. I think that it's so important, right? Because we talk about this and we're like, okay, well, Ashley did 7 months. Am I better yet? Am I fixed yet? And it's like, no, this is life. And each and every day, and you know that I love story as well as an analogy. And the TED Talk that I gave was all about being able to turn the page. To me, every single day that we wake up is an opportunity to write. And it's ours. It doesn't matter what's been written before. It doesn't matter what we think we're going to write. Right now is all that we have. And so it's just been a matter of trying to intentionally show up to write what I want it to be, not what I believe everyone else thinks it should be.
And because of our scripting as a society, the way everyone else thinks it should be, our teachers, our coaches, early in our most impressionable years, it's about get good grades, have good attendance. It's external validation of who we are. And then we go into the workplace and it's get promoted, get this, get that. And it's all about this external motivation and validation. And we're never taught enough about, what do you want? Who are you? I have such big hopes and dreams that so many of us that are acknowledging this now can help shift that in our society to raise kids to know themselves more than prove themselves. That's where we really change the world. And so this turning the page and discovering yourself, you've continued to do that. You took a trip recently out west with some friends of mine who also lead retreats and help women with this. And I think that's the other message, is there's a lot of people like us who are having these conversations and facilitating these experiences and retreats to help people do these things. So you were out with a group of women out west and continued on that journey.
Yeah, that trip actually coincided with the sort of ending of another chapter, right? The chapter that I had turned into, realizing that there has to be so much more than what I had been sold. And I felt it acutely. I think it's because I am a working woman who has all of these stories, right? We just talked about doing these things as a result of what we think we should do. The stories that society has told us, our moms have told us, we then tell ourselves. And for me, I struggled a little bit with, like, what is a woman's work and where does her worth come from? And being one who is driven to go and create and to build, I ended up creating my Sherry because I thought it was going to be a way to help heal women who were out making impact, changing the world, but also feeling like they were drowning on the inside, right? It's another story that we have on repeat in our minds, that we're going to go out, we're going to work 40, 50, 60 hours a week. We're going to then come home and have what I and others in this space that talk about this, the shadow work of managing kids, calendars, food, sports, bath time, laundry, et cetera, et cetera. And what we're talking about is doing inner work, deep work, figuring out who we are. And there's not time for that. There wasn't time for that in medicine for me, for many other professionals out there. And then you get home and you realize that your house just seems like a to-do list. Mm-hmm. There's no time for the inner work, for the reflection. So I thought that by creating this company, we were going to be able to take that kind of stuff off of women's plates so that they could make time for the things that matter most, themselves, their families, etc. And I wanted to be able to invite women in who have a heart for home, right? This heart for service. I wanted to invite them into a story that mattered and that took care of them.
Let's give some context for what My Sherry is, sure, real quick, because this is an important part of it. So My Sherry was born out of you having someone named Sherry who, while you were doctoring and doing all the things, she would come into your home and was your house manager and did things for you and allowed you to have more time to spend with your husband and your dogs and your life. And it was this beautiful symbiotic relationship that you enjoyed with Sherry that you mm-hmm. then got the brainchild that said, what if I could help other women have Sherry? And what I love about what you just said and what you did was it wasn't just about, let me hire people that can come in and clean the house. You were saying, I want the Sherrys of the world who have a heart for managing the home and caring for it in a loving way to partner with business families who have a heart for commerce and business. And the relationship that could exist in that story of, I want to help you and I want all of our lives to be better. So you are very much in the practice of bringing the house managers in to partner them with the business families to make sure that they had good representation and health care and were treated well and were trained. And it was literally a partnership that you were creating in these families, which was yes. a very different approach than saying, you know, let's have a group of people that come in and vacuum every day. Mm-hmm. And these people were coming in and being a part of these families' lives out That's of right. love and service.
Yeah. And I think that when we are able to do the thing that we do really well and focus on that, amazing things happen, right? And so it was life-changing for me. And I thought it was just me initially. But then as I started to talk to more and more women, I realized, oh no, we all feel like we're drowning. We're plastering the smile to our face, but we are dreading getting out of bed in the morning. And so I thought that this would provide help. And it did. I mean, I know that we brought good into this world, not just for the clients that we served, but for the employees that we brought on. We were able to teach them that the skills they brought were valuable.
You are bringing them together and doing employee development yeah. and really, yep. really feeding into them understanding that their gifts were unique and needed and valued. That's the way your business was built. That's why it was built. The money-making right. model was second.
That's
How
right.
can we make the money-making model serve what I know is possible in these human relationships? You know, that's the way I see the world too. Story first, humans first, and then the money-making model to support the humans.
Yeah. And we grew very fast in the course of 3 years. And with growth comes pain. You're learning and you're building and you're doing all of these things. And particularly in the life cycle of business, I think that people expect exponential growth in an unlimited fashion. And that's mm-hmm. just not true. You cannot maintain that story of people first and have hockey stick growth perpetually. When I started talking to investors, I mean, they were looking for returns and they supported the concept of the vision and the mission, certainly. But at the end of the day, it's about the return.
And you're going to hit a hot button for me really quickly, and I can't let this go any further, is a large majority of VC tech stuff is based on the money-making model first. They don't give a shit about whether it serves customers or not. It's Correct. What's your sellout number? And people are starting to wake up to this. I've got some clients that got into a founder situation like you're talking about, Yep. where they didn't even care if the product worked.
That's right. It's all about how fast can we build and sell? And what's the return? Can we get 10x, 20x? And so I didn't take any money. I turned down a lot of money.
No, you did.
Certainly, I had advisors. I had trusted people around me. But it didn't feel right. It didn't feel right because I thought I have already given away part of my soul to healthcare. I had already done that once. For money. I wasn't going to do it again. And so it made me a little bit different and it was good. And in that growth, we were learning who is our ideal client because there were fabulous, exceptional people who are just good humans and appreciated that relationship, right?
Those house managers were a part of the family.
That's exactly right. Partners. Yes. And then we learned some. We would bring clients on who did not view our home coordinators as partners. They viewed them as hired help and that they were going to squeeze every last drop out of them that they could. And technically, these people weren't breaking any rules or guidelines because we had community guidelines set up. So we would have
conversations with them, try to coach them and train them. But, you know, you can only be coached if you're interested in it. I think that there was sort of a culmination of things. The economy was getting wonky, and then we were having some more of those clients come in that weren't technically breaking any rules, but also weren't necessarily showing like appreciation, or they would leave a list that just, there was no way that list was ever going to get done, but they expected it to be done despite trying to reset expectations, et cetera. And so we were making some moves. I was in the process of restructuring how we were going to approach things. And I had a plan in place. I had talked with my chief operating officer about it. And I said, you know, what do you think about this? And then I reached out to our home coordinator manager. I actually called her because I wanted to go over the plan. You know, I said, some things need to change. Like, we need to buckle up for what I think is going to be sort of a rocky ride, you know,
financially, because of the economy.
Yeah, financially, economy wise. And then the fact that we weren't sure that we were going to be able to keep some of these clients that were just not good. When I called the manager that day, she said, hey, I'm so glad you called. You know, I was writing an email, and I was like, oh, well, okay, what was the email? And she had weekly stand-ups, you know, with all of our home coordinators to see how things were going, where they could use assistance, et cetera. And she said, well, I've gotten feedback from more than half the team at this point. And she said, I just want you to hear me. Like, it's not all of their clients, but the general consensus that I've gotten is they feel like they're breaking their minds and their bodies down on behalf of rich women who don't appreciate them. And the pit in my stomach, I thought, well, hell, there is no amount of preparation or revamping that's going to get rid of that. I don't know how to fix that. And she said, Ashley, what they're saying is like they're feeling this way and they're staying because of the culture, because of you, because of the vision and the mission that we're on. That's why they stay. She said, but I have real concerns about them burning out. And I said, I really appreciate that. And I asked her, what would you do if you were me? And she was quiet for a moment. And she said, you know, I'm not really sure. I think it's going to be hard for a little while. And I said, well, I want to take some time with what you've shared. And I want to take a minute and I want to think about this. So I went out to run, because that's what I do when I need to think. I came back and it was kind of this weird, it's not the answer I think I would have thought that I came to, but when I think about who I am, the answer was to shut it down. Shut it down. So I called a meeting of our managers. I said, this is where we are. I said, this is the feedback we're getting. And I said, it does not matter how much money we throw into this, how many more clients we get. I said, we're growing. There's nothing that's going to stop that. And I don't know how to fix this problem. And I said, does anyone have a fix to this problem? Do we know how we get past this? And it was quiet enough that you could hear a cricket sneeze. And so I said, well, then guys, I think the answer is the hard answer. And that's that this is not what any of us set out to do. Because I realized that if I kept this going in the state that it was in, right? Because in the growth, I mean, it really had become a thing that I wasn't even sure I knew anymore. Because you grow and you grow and you grow and you're building and you're learning. And I don't think that we had strayed too far off the path. But if this is the way that they were feeling, that they were a cog in a machine and not being appreciated, even if they felt appreciated by our team, it didn't matter because that wasn't who they were spending the majority of their time with. And I thought, I was alone in an operating room all day long with my thoughts. They are alone all day long in a home with their thoughts. And I felt like I had created something that was not serving them well. It didn't matter that our clients loved us. I did set out to help enable women, free women from this burden on the client side. But more importantly, I set out to help women who didn't think they had anything to offer the world change that story for themselves. On the employee side, what I was hearing is that that wasn't working out. And so made the difficult decision to close that chapter and to try to do so in a way, because of course I'm talking with with advisors and legal, and they're like, well, just shut it down. And I said, that hurts my heart. I cannot just shut it down. So I gave everybody 30 days notice. We did our best to ensure that the home coordinators who appreciated the clients that they were working with could maintain that relationship,
yeah,
so they weren't without
to
a
work
job
for them as
that's right. Right. Home and we just released people from their contracts, and then they could drop the people that they did not want to continue to help. And so tried to do the most good that we could in closing that chapter down. And, you know, in doing that, it coincided. The last day of the business was actually the day that I arrived in Sedona for this retreat,
which was with our friends Amy Woodall and Desiree Garcia. I wanted to make
that's
sure
right.
that we shouted out their names because I am a huge fan of the work they're doing to help women too. Yeah. So the high vibe retreats that they hold.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. And, you know, and that's not super up my alley, but Amy was like, I really think you should come to this. And this was a year before the business, of course, shut down. So it wasn't like I just kind of got invited.
You'd
at the
already
very
planned
end.
It. Yeah.
I had already planned it. And so I ended up out there for about a week, and it was the first time, Rebecca, even after stepping away from medicine, I just jumped straight into my sherry full time. And it was the first time that I can ever remember not having the next pedestal to get to and being able to just sit and be. I think that's uncomfortable for a lot of us, particularly high achieving women, but I had nowhere else to be. What else was I going to do?
You're right. It is very uncomfortable for high achieving women. And my first assignment for clients is, as you know, a daily stillness practice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people say to me, I don't think I can do this. I might need my money back, because the thought of being still and alone with their own thoughts is the scariest thing to them.
It is. I was told by a friend recently, she said, you know what I like about you most, Ashley? She goes, you say what everyone's thinking and no one's willing to say out loud. I was like, well, yeah, it's because I'm an asshole. But I think that is so true. I mean, my stories that I tell myself, it's not a friendly place. And I think that lots of us are living with that. And in this new chapter, as I'm sort of taking some time to figure out who I am and what I really want, to build the foundation. So whatever it is that I do in the future, and I think that this is so important, and I think a lot of us fall into this, always been moving to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, but it's built on such a shaky foundation. And when we actually stop and we take a look at that foundation, we realize that we have built our lives on, mine feels like sand. And it's just slipping, flipping, flipping, slipping. And I'm trying to build this external life, but my internal world just is not solid. And so it doesn't matter. I can start and stop and restart again over and over and over. But until I build a strong foundation, the castle I'm trying to create is going to continue to crumble.
Well said. That's the work that I am passionate about, helping my clients find their strength in their inner self and not their identity and their achievements and their title and their role. It's big. And it doesn't mean starting over. It means seeing your story through kind and loving eyes, that you really have everything you need already, but seeing it in a different light, seeing it in the light, quite frankly, and not letting it be the dark thoughts that spin, is the starting point, is to be able to say, my gosh, if I got through that kind of childhood, I have the strength and resilience to do whatever I want to do. Mm-hmm. And if I had the wherewithal to shut down a financially successful business because I care about the human spirit more than I care about my bank account, wow, doesn't that make me able to discern many things in my life? And literally letting your own story be your inspiration, not your promotion or your grades or your certifications, but who you actually are.
Yeah. And that takes work. And so that's what I'm doing now. And it's just kind of a cool place to be right now. And I would encourage anybody who has the opportunity to
simply allow themselves to be, take advantage of that time.
Absolutely. And if you need help doing it with people like Amy Woodhull and Des for a retreat, or with me with Rise and Thrive, or simply booking an Airbnb two blocks over and saying to your mom or your spouse, I need you to take care of the kids and this and that and the other for a couple of days. I need to go and be. That can be powerful too. I'm proud of you. I just knew this story will help people. It will allow them to see themselves in some way. And these are the kinds of stories that I believe in this time of awakening and in this time of the transition that we started it from the industrial age model of work, that it's all about achievements and just come back on Monday. It's fine. We started the shift in 2019 when the burnout diagnosis went viral, but then we hadn't shut down. And now we've had this awakening. And I think we're going to have about 7, 8, 10 years of chaos that we already started in 2019 because we had to create the new way. And so it's going to take more people like you courageously making the decisions for humans first and then building businesses around our loving care of our nervous system and our lives. We can build money-making models around good quality human care and service. I know it because I have clients that are doing it. I'm witnessing it in some of my friends and colleagues in this kind of work, and it can be done. But like you said, it's feeling like the asshole of your friends because you are saying the things that nobody else is saying. You've got to be willing to do things differently and for people to look at you like you're batshit crazy.
Yes.
You got to have the resolve to say, yep, I know this looks crazy. And it's only crazy until it works. And then all of a sudden, we're going to get a flywheel and we're going to get people going, oh, that does work. Oh, that does work. And then all of a sudden, 20 years from now, that will be the normal way of life and work. But we got some crazy times right now with people because a lot of managers and leaders are trying to get everybody back to the office into the old way. It's not working. It's not going to work.
That's right.
Time to do it different. Thank you for modeling that for us today. And I'm excited to see what the future holds for you too.
Thank you so much for having me on to share my story.
If you want help with this, message me. If I'm not the right person, I certainly know people that can help you. And I am dedicated to helping as many people as I can get to that place of being. All right, y'all. Make it a great day. I'm not coming down. Hey, y'all. Fun fact, if you like the music for the podcast, that is actually my son, Cameron Hessian. And I would love it if you would go to Spotify and iTunes and follow him and download some of his other music. My personal favorite is TV Land.